This is the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. And in this show, I'm going to bring you an amazing woman, and she's going to tell us all about her traumatic brain injury story. This is a special episode because it's episode 50. I'm super pumped and proud of that. And you may have this recollection that I've heard this voice. This person's been on the show before because she has. She's been on the show before because she was on the episode that I did that featured the two wonderful ladies from The Big Flower Fight, an awesome show on Netflix. So if you want to learn more about a specific person's struggle and journey and triumph with and over TBI, this will be a great show for you. So let's buckle in. Let's go for a ride. Thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission tells you how to move every single day, and together that is the Upgraded Life.
All right, you're here with another episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast. This is a first for this show. It's a first because I have a repeat guest on. So I'm kind of in the space. Yeah, absolutely. And so I have here again for the second time just herself, the one and only Jordan Marks. And she was with us early on in this podcast's history. And if you've heard the name, you might have heard it now twice for two different reasons. One might be because you and your employer, is it employer? Like, how do you refer to Sarah?
I just call her my boss. She's my boss.
Your boss.
Yeah.
Sarah Campbell were on a show called what?
The Big Flower Fight.
Right.
On Netflix.
And then you were just telling me that you had a viral video on TikTok. So
yeah,
who knows?
15 million views. Oh man, I don't even know. You know, it's so funny because people always talk about, you know, whenever I see any creator go viral, they're always like, oh, thank you so much for liking my video. Thank you for sharing. I didn't know this was going to happen. And I always kind of laughed because in my head I was thinking, well, you posted a video like what, wanting it to go viral, and now it's gone viral and you're saying you didn't expect it to happen. However, I did post a video of myself pretending to be a talking dog. And out of all of the videos of mine that went viral, it happened to be that one. I can't believe it.
And truth be told, that's how I connected with you as well, was through one of your videos that was caught my attention because it was funny. And it was chickens that learned how to respond to a bass line in a song.
Yeah. So, oh, I remember that video. Yes, the chickens.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe I should post that one on TikTok and see if it does well.
That's right. But yeah, that's where you caught my attention. And then, you know, for folks that are wondering, you know, I do sift through social media, mostly Instagram for this podcast. And I look for people that have a depth in their post, right? Because anybody can get on Instagram, anybody can post things, anybody can post, you know, quotes or whatnot. But they're, for me to bring them on this show, there's got to be some depth. And part of your depth was you did a whole highlight. I don't know. It was a long Instagram story,
yeah.
You know, that was broken up into itty little bitty segments because of how long it was.
Yeah.
And it was all about something that you experienced, had to overcome. Mm-hmm. It's definitely part of your journey. I don't know if that's part of, you know, your Instagram handle is the Jordy Journey. I don't know if that's reflected in there because of that or not. But that's where I got a sense of, hey, this gal's got something to talk about. I didn't even know about Sarah Campbell.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't even know about our fight.
That's amazing.
It was purely you and kind of that highlight about your experience with something, and that something was what?
I have a TBI, which is a traumatic brain injury. I sustained it in July of 2013. So we're just over the 7-year mark on that. And yeah, it is, a journey is a great word. Ironically, my Instagram handle has been the Jordy Journey for a long time. But it's come to kind of sum up everything that's happened in my life quite well. So I'm sticking with that for now.
Yeah, nice. And so that's, again, what caught my attention in addition to the chicken video. And
oh, wildly fluctuating sides of the spectrum here.
Right, right. And so we're here to talk about your TBI in your journey. And it's something in my world, in my traditional training as a mental health therapist. So I'm familiar with TBI. I've had coworkers that have had significant TBI. I in my day job, there's a handful of kids that I care for that, you know, have been diagnosed with TBI. So it's not strange to me, but there's probably a lot of people who stand to benefit from hearing somebody like you share their story.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's one of the reasons that I love to speak about it so much. I feel like this is such an underrated or undereducated injury in the way that so many people have a concussion or some form of serious brain injury, honestly, at some point in their life. And people are so relaxed about it and kind of say things like, oh, it's just a concussion, it's just this, it's just that, right, without realizing how severe these things can get very quickly. Like, you know, they can go from, oh, you had a bump on your head to, oh my gosh, now you can't walk in a matter of minutes. Yeah. And a lot of people don't know the signs to look for when it's happening, or how to deal from somebody when they're healing with it, or how to treat that person who might be like me 7 years down the road, who you would never know that I have this unless I were to tell you about it. So I love speaking about it. I'm an open book as far as this goes, because I think it's important that people know things like this happen all the time. And there are people that are dealing with these invisible injuries that you don't see, who are really just trying to make their way through life like everybody else.
So why don't you walk us back to the situation where you, you know, endured your TBI. If I remember right, it was in your college years, mm-hmm, and we're just having fun as a college student.
Yeah. You have such a great memory. That's something I don't have anymore. yeah, it was my junior summer of college. I was at a music festival with a friend of mine, minding my own business, having a great time. We were just hanging out. We were not up to any funny business. We were just two kids at a rock concert. And there were multiple stages set up at this event, so you could kind of go from artist to artist and just walk around. And I noticed an artist had just begun playing, and there was not a large crowd in front of the stage. And I kind of waved my friend over, like, hey, let's go check out what's going on over here. It seems pretty empty. So we walked right up front to the front of the stage, where it was like the stage and then a small space and then those big metal barriers, like the stage dividers, to keep the crowd from moving forward. Right. And kind of as soon as we approached the area, I noticed that this person on stage was being quite like aggressive, like pumping up the crowd, like really moving a lot, lots of flailing and yelling. And I was like, wow, you know, this person's very excited up there. And I had turned to my side to make a comment to my friend. And at the moment that I had turned to my side to look at her and make a comment, the person on stage attempted a stage dive, but it was much less of a stage dive and more of just a free-for-all jump, like straight out into the crowd. And this person landed on the sacrum, the hardest part of their back, landed on my head and my neck. And I ended up sustaining, we don't have like an official number because the bruising was quite bad on my brain, but approximately 3 to 5 concussions in just from that one blow. I was hit on the left side of my head from the force of his body, and then the right side of my head down into my shoulder. He rolled on top of the back of my head. That was one concussion there. Then I went forward. My forehead went straight down into the metal bar. Yeah. And then from there, I went straight down into the pavement. So we're saying once on the left side, once on the right side, once on the back, and probably 2 in the front. And I grew up as a horseback rider as well, and had already sustained at least one other significant concussion in my lifetime. And I can't really describe the moment of clarity when I kind of... I am not clear on whether or not I lost consciousness. Is that the right way to say the word consciousness? But I do remember standing up, and it was so surreal because I felt like, I've never done hard drugs in my life, but it felt like what I would imagine being on drugs to feel like. Everything was kind of cloudy and moving slowly, and people were shadows and lights looked strange. But I was okay. I felt okay, but I knew something was wrong. And I remember turning back to my friend. And of course, my friend was like, oh my gosh, are you okay? And I just remember saying to her, you know what? No, I don't think I'm okay. I think that we need to go find help. And so we started walking up to the medical tent, which at this rock festival was about 1/2 mile away. So it was about like a 7 to 10 minute walk to reach this medical tent. And, we got about halfway there when I remember kind of stopping dead in my tracks. And my friend just kind of kept walking and turned around and said, hey, come on, we're going to the medical tent. And I just have such a vivid memory of looking at her in kind of this panic and saying, I can't walk. And she kind of looked back at me and said, what do you mean? Like, you were just walking. And I said, yeah, I know, but in this moment right now, I cannot move my body. And that's when I realized, oh, something is really wrong. Mm-hmm. So a crowd of people were enlisted for help, and I ended up getting to the medical tent. Okay. And then pretty much as soon as I got to the medical tent and I had sort of a sense of safety is when I think I really allowed my body to give in to the severity of what had happened. So at this point, it's about 15 minutes on that first adrenaline of like, oh my gosh, I've just been smothered underneath of another human body started to wear away. And slowly but surely, I felt my senses kind of leaving. At this point, I was having trouble walking. And then I was having trouble speaking. I was having trouble reading anything. I was having trouble recalling information. I couldn't see. I couldn't hear. All in like these waves of like panic. It felt like I was in a tornado of my senses being ripped away and then given back and then ripped away and then given back. And I was in the hospital. They took me straight to the hospital. I was in there for, you know, quite a few hours where they basically told me, you know, this is really serious. You need to go somewhere where they can actually check you out and do some brain scans and whatnot. So I was out of state at the time. It was not where I live. I was about 6 hours away. My friend put me in the back seat of her car. We drove to a hospital, and by the time we got to the hospital, I couldn't tell you what my name was. You know, I couldn't walk, couldn't talk, couldn't read, couldn't write. You know, everything was gone. And pretty much from that moment on, you know, from that lowest point of having, you know, all of the last 20 odd years, 22 years of learning be stripped away. And I had to start all over from square one, learning the basic things that, you know, everybody knows. And I felt like I was, you know, back to the beginning. But what's so interesting about an injury like this is it affects everyone differently. And it affects even the person who experiences it differently from day to day. And it's such a difficult injury to maneuver because nobody can see it. And the person who has it can't explain what's happening. And it was just a really dark, dark time. I, on the back end of this, developed post-concussion disorder, which is essentially like a severe depression that you get when you can't control your brain. And I lived with that for quite some time, and it was very dark and very scary, but you know, I lived through it. I lived to tell the tale. And a good chunk of people that pass away from an injury like this actually pass away not because of the brain injury itself, but because of that post-concussion disorder. A lot of people with brain injuries end their life in suicide because it just really is so deep and dark and terrifying. So I guess now my question for you is, what questions do you have? I don't hold anything back with this one. It's all in.
Perfect. So first, an observation.
Yeah.
One of my pet peeves, and you didn't do it, which is you use the word surreal in this correctly.
Oh, great. Yay. I'm glad.
You know, where this, you know, terrible thing happened and you're trying to make sense of it. And it was very surreal. Mm-hmm. Right? I see people all the time like, yes, I just graduated. It was so surreal. Like, well,
you're like, well, that's not a great thing. Yeah.
Just wanted to throw that in there.
Oh, thanks. I'm glad I did it right.
You remember.
Yeah.
That piece that you just ended with, though, about how this the post-concussion depression, mm-hmm. you know, I had a coworker who was in the military. He was in special forces and got out and was an avid mountain climber and fell and just had to, you know, had a lot of injuries, not just the concussion and the TBI, but, you know, basically had to relearn how to walk and talk and everything. And he would get super frustrated. He always had a stutter because of it.
Yeah.
And he would, you know, stop mid sentence and, you know, get lost in his conversation.
Yeah.
And you could tell it was super frustrating, you know, for him, because at one point in time he was elite, right? Yeah. He was special forces. He was special forces Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, having to just be really supportive of him because we were working on the same shift as a team in corrections, right? And so I remember having to learn kind of his pattern and what was going on with him and being supportive of him along that. Yeah. So stories like that, I have some of my own.
Yeah. Support is definitely something that I think a lot of TBI survivors are lacking. And I don't think people mean to be unsupportive, but I think it's something that is so misunderstood. Yeah. And unless you are aware of, you know, somebody like you who's had training is probably more aware of these types of things. Like you said, like stuttering, losing thoughts, things like that. Normally, when I first tell somebody about my injury, it's in a moment like that, when I'm around new people who aren't aware, and I stop mid-sentence and just kind of stare into the stratosphere for a second. And then normally I'll have to catch myself and come back and say, hey, listen, I'm sorry. I do this sometimes. And here's why. And once I tell somebody, it becomes a lot easier for them to kind of pick up little places in my daily life where I sometimes slip up. But at this point, I'm 7 years of therapy deep in this, cognitive therapy, physical therapy, trying to rebuild these skills. I actually just graduated my cognitive therapy. And I was so excited. It was one of those moments where she was like, yeah, I think that I've taught you everything that I can teach you at this point. And I was like, well, what do you mean? I don't feel fixed. And she was like, well, no, I mean, this is who you are now. And these things are going to be with you forever. But, you know, from the perspective of somebody who lives through it, it at first is scary because, well, it's so hard for me to speak about what it was like for me in that moment because my brain was not functioning. And it's often hard to try to explain what it's like when your brain's not functioning, because even I can't fully remember a lot of what I was experiencing in that moment. But I just remember how dark it was. And I, against my doctor's instructions, not against their instructions, but maybe against their suggestion, ended up going back to college. And I went to college out of state where my insurance did not cover my therapy. So I stopped going to therapy. This is about 3 months after my accident, my injury. And it was really difficult. I made that choice, you know, but I put myself back in a situation where I lived by myself, where I did not have insurance to cover my therapy. I was in college, which of course is a lot of reading and writing, which I was not back to 100%. And no offense to any of my friends that I had at the time, they were all wonderful people. But when you're 21 years old and in college, the last thing you want to do is care for somebody who doesn't know how to cook themselves a grilled cheese. You know what I mean? And I was very, very, very lucky to live with a girl in college. I often credit her with saving my life, and I think my parents would do the same, who never asked any questions. She never doubted what I was going through. She never made me feel like I was crazy. She never asked, well, what's wrong with you? What's going on? Do you need help? She never asked. She just did these things. And my routine when I got back to school, as is the routine of many people with a TBI and post-concussion disorder, is to fixate on one thing that you have control over and run it into the ground. And for me, that was my schoolwork. I was a theater major, an acting major, which actually was very beneficial because I was studying emotions, right? And that was super helpful for me in my healing to be in a college path where literally I was studying how to emote and what emotions are, because even emotions are something I had to relearn. I didn't understand. I wasn't able to identify what was happening. So I fixated on my schoolwork and I studied and I studied and I studied every single day for hours and hours and hours a day. I would lock myself in my room. I would turn off all of the lights. I would read my books with a flashlight as best as I could. And my roommate would cook me dinner and she would come leave it on my doorstep. Or she would say, hey, you've been doing this for a long time. Like, can I just come sit on your floor with you? And I would say, most of the times I'd say no. And she'd say, you know, okay, that's great. I'm going to sit in the hallway anyway. And I'm just going to be here with you. And she would walk me to class if I needed it. She drove me to the grocery store when I needed it. I also, as a part of post-concussion disorder, would have anxiety attacks or panic attacks. And she never, ever questioned it. And I was so lucky to have her and have somebody who didn't doubt what I was going through, even if they didn't get it. Right. And I always say my favorite memory of her is I remember coming downstairs one day and I had just kind of had this light bulb moment of, I recalled a memory of a grilled cheese somewhere in my brain. And I kind of came downstairs and I said, Cameron, do you know how to make a grilled cheese? And she was like, yeah, I can make a grilled cheese. And I remember asking her, what is a grilled cheese? I know that I like it. I'm remembering liking a grilled cheese, but I don't know what it is. Can you show me? And we went to the grocery store. She showed me, this is bread, this is cheese, this is butter, this is what you need. And we came home and we had like a little like electric skillet, and she put it on the floor, and we sat on the floor and she taught me, you know, here's the piece of bread. You put the butter on the bread, you put the bread on the skillet, then you put the cheese, and then you put the other bread, and then you flip it over. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best thing anyone's ever shown me in my whole life. And to this day, whenever I make a grilled cheese, I think about that moment sitting on my floor with her and just how much one person can make such a big difference. And now I love grilled cheeses even more than I think that I did before. And nice. It's great. Awesome. And ironically, she is a teacher now. She took those skills and she became a kindergarten teacher.
Amazing. Yeah. So I'm interested in what cognitive therapy looks like for somebody with TBI.
Yeah. So my very first form of cognitive therapy was very much like how I would imagine teaching children in school, right? So for my TBI specifically, there's some people who have permanent memory loss. And for me, I had initial memory loss, but then pretty quickly started showing the ability to recall memories. So it became very clear that my brain wasn't entirely broken, but just very, very bruised. And with the right coaching, I was able to, instead of having to relearn everything all over again, I was able to piece things back together slowly. So I had a little bit of a step up from some people whose injuries are far worse and they have to actually relearn everything. Whereas for me, I had it. I just had to find it again, if that makes sense. So in the beginning, it was very much like, you know, can you draw a circle? What is a square? Can you write down the months of the year? Can you count from 1 to 10? Those kinds of things. Very basic, like as a human being, what are you able to do cognitively at this moment?
Right.
Now, from there, I moved into, okay, so now you're piecing back information slowly but surely. Can you use a word in a sentence? Do you have the ability to identify a word, define that word in your brain, and then put it into a sentence, right? So we went from the basics to the slightly more, okay, this is more abstract. Like, can you pull out these words and piece them together? And then, you know, along with that came the more abstract, like, spelling. Like, can you take these random letters and make a word out of it? Like, what is it that you're able to do? And that not only was I, you know, helping to identify where I was in the process, but also helping me and my doctors to understand how my brain worked now, right? So how is my brain, now that it is injured, retaining information? How am I able to identify information that I had and then didn't have and now I'm finding again? Where is that coming from? And what kind of techniques and tips and skills and tactics work on my brain and who I am now in order to progress? And then the more advanced therapy, it's funny because with cognitive therapy, even the more advanced therapy feels like children's work, right? It's a lot of shapes, a lot of putting things in alphabetical order, a lot of numbering things in order, but they take the papers away, right? So whereas before I was looking at a piece of paper that said, can you put these words in alphabetical order? They would say, my therapists would give me words that I would have to then picture in my brain and put into alphabetical order and then say back to them. And that I actually found really difficult. These memory tactics are really hard to put into practice in the office, but even more so out in the real world when other things are happening, right? And you're having in the blink of an eye to work on recalling memory or recalling words or things like that. I graduated, so apparently they think that I'm ready for the real world. And I have healed remarkably well for how scary my injury was at first. I've done well in my healing, and now it's just about managing the injury so that I am able to continue doing well, because I see mm-hmm. a direct reflection in the way that I maintain my day-to-day life, right? Like what I'm eating, how much sleep I'm getting, how much time I'm spending in front of a computer screen, how much writing I do in a day, how much reading I do in a day. All of that affects me. What I'm drinking, you give me, man, let me tell you what, I have become the cheapest date in the world. You give me half a beer and I'm like, woohoo! My brain just can't process these things the same anymore. So yeah, my more advanced therapy grows into like, how do you manage these symptoms in the real world? And you know, when I have a migraine, which happens all the time when I have a migraine, how do I continue to think through that? Or how, you know, for me, light is a really big trigger. My brain no longer processes light like it should. So mm-hmm. if I'm driving in a car at sunrise or sunset and there's shadows on the road, and those shadows cause like kind of a strobe effect on my dashboard, I have to pull over. I cannot drive. It will put me to sleep. I'll pass out. I'll get a bad migraine. And it's just kind of learning to manage those things. Like, okay, you feel like mm-hmm. you need to fall asleep. What can you do to your brain to say, you know, hey, this isn't safe. You need to keep driving, you know, put on 5 pairs of sunglasses if you have to. Just little things like that, mm-hmm. you know, when people say brain injury and I say I had to relearn reading, writing, walking, talking. Well, yeah, I've done that now, but that's not the end of it, right? I have other things that I have to deal with. Yeah. So that's kind of where I am in my therapy at the moment, but I've graduated from cognitive therapy more into physical therapy to manage what's going on in my body, and also just talk therapy, because having another person sometimes just to tell things to is a huge weight lifted off of the body. And I'm really enjoying it. I love being in therapy of all kinds. I think everybody should be in all kinds of therapy. I feel like even the average person could benefit from some form of cognitive therapy or physical therapy, and definitely talk therapy. I love it. It's great.
Thanks for giving us a glimpse into that. Cause I, you know, definitely wasn't what I was thinking. Not that I really had an idea of what, cognitive therapy for somebody who's recovering from TBI would look like. Yeah. And so you being a theater major, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I don't know, you know, where you went with that in terms of interest, but
yeah,
pretty much every show, you know, television show, whether it's a cartoon or a sitcom that goes any length of time mm-hmm. will have the bump on the head plot.
There's always the bump in the, Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And so I was thinking about that. And so my next question is, you know, did you experience, or do you still experience any kind of shift in your personality?
Yeah, what a great question. I've been told by those who know me best that I am different mm-hmm. now than I was before.
Mm-hmm.
I do see shifts in my personality, but it's not always drastic. And it often mm-hmm. feels more like a mood change than a personality change. I used to, we talked about biggest pet peeves earlier. My biggest pet peeve of all time used to be indecisiveness. If we were at a restaurant and somebody didn't know what to order, I had no empathy. I was like, what do you want to eat? Pick a food, you know? And now I go to a restaurant and I'm staring at that menu for 20 minutes. And I'm like, I don't even know what half of these words mean. I do not understand. Just kidding. I've moved
past the grilled cheese.
Where's the grilled cheese? Past that point now. But my mom, who I love very, very, very dearly, she always retells the moment that she realized how different I'd actually become. And it is, mm-hmm. we were standing at a Trader Joe's, and Trader Joe's has these like animal cracker cookies. They're little cats, and they have a chocolate box and a vanilla box. Those are the only options, the chocolate box or the vanilla box. And I stood in Trader Joe's, and I was bawling my eyes out because I didn't know what chocolate was. I didn't know what vanilla was. I knew that I wanted what was on the shelf, but I had no idea how to choose what I wanted. Still to this day, grocery stores are my worst enemy because they have 50,000 different kinds of the same thing, and it drives me nuts. I don't know which one. I don't know which one's the best one. But she remembers like in that moment realizing like, oh my gosh, this person here is so different than the person that was here a month ago. And it's just those small things like that, like indecisiveness. I'm so indecisive now, whereas before that was my biggest pet peeve. I get angry very easily now. It's much harder for me to hide what I am feeling. Whereas before I was very good at filtering my emotions and being like, okay, I'm mad now, but it's not the right time to be mad. So I'm going to hold that in for later. Whereas now if I'm mad, I'm mad and you're going to know about it. I do not have the capacity to hold that in anymore, you know? So yeah, there's definitely small things, but it's hard for me to compare and contrast because sometimes I don't even realize it's happening. That's the nature of the injury is it all happens up here in your brain. And when your brain is the powerhouse of all things and your brain doesn't work, it's so hard to tell that it's not working because your brain is controlling the fact that it's not working and the brain will protect itself, right? The brain doesn't want you to know that it's not working. So your brain will make you think that it's working when in fact it's not working. And somebody has to tell you, somebody has to tell you, hey, 2 + 2 is not 19. It's 8. And you're like, excuse me. That's not what my brain said in that moment. It was 18. That's what we're going with.
Right. And when you were kind of detailing the cognitive therapy, right? I mean, what's a square? What's a circle? Well, those are things like in, at least not in my, I'm looking, you know, in front of me right now, there's all kinds of things that are squares.
Yeah.
But I never think like, oh, that's a square and oh, that's a circle. But because I take it for granted, I know what those things are.
I've noticed the new, so like, you know, when you log into a website or whatever and you have to prove that you're human, they've started doing a new capture test now that is named, can you pick the two same shapes? And the first time I saw that, I almost had to excuse myself to have a little mental breakdown because that is the kind of thing where right after my injury, they were showing me these things to kind of gauge how bad it was. And I very distinctly remember the moment when I was being seen by a neurologist for the first time. And I had a very bad experience. This was a neurologist who I think saw me as a small teenage girl who was complaining about a headache and chose not to see the validity of what I was saying. I very clearly remember the moment when he realized that I wasn't lying. And I remember, it's funny, in the moment I couldn't remember it. I remember it so well now. He gave me three animals, very, very relaxed. He said, I'm naming these three animals, a rabbit, a parrot, and a duck. What three animals did I say? And I, not only did I start crying, I was shaking. I felt like I was going to pee my pants. I was like, I was in absolute panic where I didn't, not only did I not know what he said, I didn't know those were animals. And that was the moment when I think everybody kind of realized, oh, she's serious about this. Like nobody who's just complaining about a headache is going to pee their pants because they don't know what a rabbit is.
Sure.
So when I saw that recapture test, it was kind of like this almost like a little PTSD flashback of being like, oh my gosh, I don't know. And now, of course, that test has been everywhere recently, and I've seen it 10 times, and I'm good with it, and I've come to terms with the fact that this is the thing that we're doing in the world now, and I'm going to have to press two boxes when I see them. But yeah, the first time I saw that, I was like, oh no, this can't be happening. Mm-hmm. That's exactly the kind of things that I was doing.
Yeah. What was your prognosis on the front end of this? Or did they give you a prognosis?
As like all the things I got to deal with after the fact?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously once they realized that you had, you know, all these different concussions, you know, did they say, you know, you got a 40% chance of blah, blah, blah. You know, what was your prognosis on the front end?
You know, if they gave me one, I don't remember. Mm-hmm. I know that I was on the medical charts. It says TBI and post-concussion disorder. That was the original kind of thing. And it was so much, there's so many unknowns when it comes to a brain injury. So I think the prognosis that we went with was, let's just do some stuff and hope it gets better. Because there's really no, I did have an MRI to check for like an official brain bleed. There was no aneurysm. Mm-hmm. My head was okay. Yep. It was just very, very bad. I got hit really hard in a lot of places.
Yeah.
And it affected, you know, unfortunately for me, well, maybe not so unfortunately, instead of getting hit really bad in one place, I got hit pretty bad in all of the places, right? So it affected everything. Right. The blow that was the least was the blow to the back of my head, which is just the back of your head, if I'm not mistaken, is taste and smell, which for me was okay, but everything else was shot. And it was just a let's throw all caution to the wind. Let's go do some therapy, see what happens. And I think the bulk of my healing happened in that first 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. But then after that, once you're done with the injury itself, is then all of the things that come from the injury, right? The anxiety, the depression, which for me, the anxiety sticks around. The heavy depression went away, thank goodness. I've been recently diagnosed with pseudobulbar syndrome, which is the inability to control tears at inappropriate times. So for a normal person, you know, crying happens when you're sad. For me, if you say something and it makes me happy, I'm crying. If we're walking down the street and we see a dog, I'm crying. If I'm scared, I'm crying. If I'm mad, I'm crying, right? All the time. And that's the worst one, especially being a woman and not wanting to cry in front, you know, not wanting somebody to play it off as, oh, she's being dramatic. Oh, she's crying. For me, right. Especially in professional situations when all of a sudden I'm crying and I have to explain to a room full of people that I can't help it. So embarrassing. So embarrassing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But yeah, those are the things, you know, I'm still learning. It's funny, a brain injury gets better, but it never goes away. And
sure.
There are things that get better and get worse, like my light sensitivity and my sound sensitivity. Like I said, if I'm not treating my other symptoms, those get really bad. And those have the ability to then affect my brain. And if I drive too long at sunset without sunglasses on, I will need to take a nap, or else the next day I won't be able to speak correctly. And it's just about learning. Like, it's taken 7 years of education and living with my new brain to understand that that's just how I work now. You know, the first time I was driving a car and I felt like I had to fall asleep, I was terrified. I was like, what is happening? And now I'm just like, oh gosh, you know, not again. No, not again. This is so annoying. You know?
Yeah. I was thinking that when you talked about that car story about, I mean, how could you know? And then to how terribly frightening it is. Like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah. It was really scary. And I get like, right at the very top of my spine, kind of like where the spine connects to the skull, I get really horrible pain there. When my brain is having trouble, it manifests in physical pain. And that's something that I've learned, which took me probably about 6 years to learn. I don't think it was even till my most recent bout of cognitive therapy when I realized that my brain injury was manifesting in terms of physical pain. I had no idea. So it's just about learning these things. And I feel like every day I learn something new about, you know, what's going on or what's happening. And it's evolving all the time. Sometimes things get better. Sometimes things get worse. And you just, I'm thankful that now at this point, I'm able to identify things much easier. And that makes it, I mean, it's a really scary injury when you don't know what's going on. The people around you don't know what's going on. You don't know how to explain it. Things are always changing. So I'm very happy to be 7 years removed from it, where I can talk about it like this and feel a sense of like safety. Whereas before, I couldn't even tell you what was going on. I had no idea. I had nothing to base anything off of. I was just living my life kind of like a trial and error scenario, trying to figure out what worked with my new brain. We're getting there. It's slowly but surely, but 7 years is a lot better than 1 year. A lot better off now than I was at 3 years. So we keep learning.
Yeah. Is there support communities out there, support groups for folks that have TBI?
Yeah, there definitely are. There's some great ones on Facebook. Facebook is really where that manifests the most. But for me, I didn't find that to be the best course of action. I found professional help to be the best, because in a support group, you often have other people who are also struggling. And when you're struggling, then faced with other people who are also struggling, it kind of just makes it feel worse. You know, like there would be people coming on explaining their different symptoms and their different problems. And then all of a sudden I was reassessing everything I had just learned about myself. Like, oh my gosh, am I also feeling that? Like, is the thing that this person describing, is that something that I have because of my TBI, or do I experience that the same as a normal person?
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So for me, it was not helpful. Actually, something that was really helpful for me, on and off. It took me a long time to digest it, but there's a documentary on Netflix called My Beautiful Broken Brain that follows the story of a young woman named Lacha who had a brain injury. Hers was not traumatic. Hers was medical. She had the same injury as I did, except her. So she had a brain aneurysm. I wasn't quite there, but she had the same essential injury that I had. Mine was traumatic. Hers was naturally occurring. And watching that documentary was like seeing myself all over again. The things she was going through, the symptoms she was having, what she was experiencing was so eerily similar to my story that the first probably 10 times I tried to watch it, I could only get about 15 minutes in before I had to turn it off because it was extremely painful. But as I've grown and I've healed, I've been able to look back on that documentary, and I've made it all the way through now more than once. I've watched it a few times. But if ever anybody who doesn't have an injury is trying to learn what life is like with an injury, that is the first one I recommend because it does such a wonderful job of showing what healing looks like in real time for somebody who is able to look back on what those moments were like. And I'm so glad. I don't know how in the world she had the wherewithal to think, oh, I should be filming this. But I'm really glad she did, because I think it's important for somebody to be able to say, hey, this is who I am now, and this is who I was, and this is what was happening, and this is how you help someone who's going through that. Because kind of like me, if you watch her interviews now, you would have no idea anything ever happened. And yet you look at this video from 5 years ago where she doesn't even know her own name, doesn't know what the alphabet is. So that's a really great place to go. Now, like I said, that's probably not the best place for someone with an injury, because it will be very overwhelming and very scary. I always say for people without an injury, that's the place to go. People with an injury, I always say professional help is the best, the right people. It took me a couple tries to find that's a sentence. Sometimes I have to make sure I'm saying it right. find a therapist that was good for me. But those people are definitely out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I took a pretty significant fall myself. In July or early July, or oh, maybe I think it was July 12th. Yeah. And I fell from 15 feet up.
Oh my gosh.
Was doing some tree work, fell off the ladder. And I landed on my left rib cage here.
Ouch.
But I was wearing a helmet. And so I had a scrape down my face. Yeah. I didn't lose consciousness. Reason why I'm telling the story though is when I went to the chiropractor, because I had been checked out urgent care, and they basically said, yep, you fell, don't fall off ladders, and it's it'll take about
very six, helpful isn't
eight
it
weeks
very helpful when they say yes, you are correct, you did fall, and you're like, no, I knew that part, thank you.
Right. Yeah, but the chiropractor said, you know, the best thing you can do is obviously rest and eat Costco organic bone broth. And because of the damage to my ribs and cartilage, he said, that's what your body's gonna
need that.
Be healing for it more than anything. So kind of the same question to you, did they give you any kind of, lifestyle changes, diet or, supplements or anything out there?
You know, luckily for me at the time, I was already in the best physical shape I'd ever been in. And I had been on a real health kick. I actually, at the time of my injury, was thinking about adding a dietary minor to my degree. I was really into it at the time. Mm-hmm. So no, they didn't give me anything in terms of diet. Obviously rest was a big one, and they pretty much excommunicated me from any form of electronic light because it was really clear right away that my brain no longer was handling light in any way, shape or form. I even have glasses now to help me with that. I don't know what it is, but my brain no longer understands how to process light. So all TV, cell phone, any sort of luminescent light, you see on makeup mirrors and stuff, they have those super bright light bulbs around the edge. Couldn't do any of that kind of stuff. Now don't tell my doctors, but I did it anyway. I mean, literally their diagnosis for me was sit on the couch. The other things, it really is so funny how childlike the injury is. So it was no electronics, lots of Play-Doh, Lincoln Logs, Legos, puzzles, things like that could pass the time, but also be used to kind of monitor how my brain was doing and how I was healing. Like some day, you know, it's really true. Some days I was able to build a Lincoln log cabin, and other days I didn't understand how to hold hold it in my hand, you know, things like that. But no dietary for me. On the back end of my injury, I actually struggled a lot with food, and it happens. People who have serious TBIs will often fixate on things that are already familiar for them. For me, it was at the time it was schoolwork and food. The problem with having a brain injury and choosing to fixate on food is that I didn't understand the purpose of food anymore. I didn't understand what hunger was. I couldn't identify the feeling of hunger. I didn't know when to eat or what to eat when, like what was appropriate. Like I didn't know, like to me, lasagna was a breakfast food and cereal was a nighttime food. And that kind of a thing. I didn't have that wherewithal. So food actually very quickly became my enemy because I stopped eating because I didn't understand what was going on. And that's just one of those things where like, it's so hard to explain how or why that happened, because in my brain I was doing it right, but I didn't have anybody teaching me how to do these things, because it's one of those things that nobody really thinks about to teach you. You're 21 years old and you don't know what an apple is. Like, what are you talking about? So that's why I was thankful to have my roommate Cameron, who eventually we just decided that we would set an alarm, and I learned to identify when to eat based off of time, right? I would eat three meals a day and snacks in between based off what my alarm said. And kind of from there, I was able to notice things like, oh, hey, towards my third alarm, my stomach kind of gets this weird feeling. I must be hungry. That must be what this is. And I kind of learned how to eat all over again. So how to eat, man, what a crazy journey. I learned, the sentence that just came out of my mouth was, I learned how to eat.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy.
Yeah. At 21 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So how did school end up for you then? I mean, this is, again, your junior, is that what you said?
My junior year. You know, really well, to everyone's utter shock and dismay, I actually graduated summa cum laude, top, I think, 2% in the school and number one in my specific major. But a lot of that was because I learned to fixate on that. That is what I did. And of course, towards my senior year, you know, in my senior year, things got a lot better in terms of learning capacity. My junior year was rough, but I pulled it back around. But I really liked school. And like I said, I was lucky to be learning something that wasn't math or, you know, science. It was not to say
physics.
Not to say that acting isn't difficult, because it is very strenuous, but it's emotionally strenuous at a time when I think that was really okay for me. I needed to be learning how to be sad and how to be angry and how to be happy. And it was helpful because I was learning not only what those emotions were, but how people portrayed them, right? So really, there was no better major for me to be in than acting, where I could see, okay, this is what angry looks like. Kind of like how I learned to identify, this is what hungry feels like. This is what angry feels like. When people are angry, this is the things that they do. This is what they say. This is how they act. This is how you emulate that. You know, this is what people do when they're happy. So I was actually, you know, really thankful to be in that line of education. I found it super helpful. And I think that it was a really valuable tool for me at a time when it could have been not. If I was in math, there's no way I never would have been back to school. No way. However, I did have to learn, you know, I still, even in theater, you know, you write papers and there's things like that. I remember one time, I think it was my second month back to school after my injury. And it was very, very relaxed at the end of a class period. My professor said, everybody take out a notebook and, you know, write down one page about how you're feeling right now. And I picked up my pencil. I didn't know how to write any words. Not a single word came to my mind, not a single letter, nothing. And I burst into tears, and it was so embarrassing, but it's just one of those learning moments when you just have to say to people like, listen, at that time I was less upfront about what was actually going on because I didn't know, because my brain was still healing. But you know, it was one of those moments where it's just like, okay, like this is who I am now. Sometimes I can't write things, and that's okay. We just have to tell people, you know, Miss Smith, I don't know how to write words right now. And of course, you know, everybody, all of my teachers had been made very aware of what was going on. Right. But yeah, I remember that moment of like, I'm doing so good at school, but I don't know how to write with a pencil.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have a good friend of mine who relocated down to Pasadena to get her doctorate in psychology.
Wow.
And was in a bad car wreck and, you know, shattered the windshield with her forehead.
Oh man. And, yikes.
And I remember messaging with her throughout that time period. And, you know, she was this post-concussion depression. You know, I didn't know that was a thing,
yeah. But,
you know, where she's like, I can't read. Mm-hmm. I can't, like, as a counselor, right? You're sitting with clients. Like you said, oh, to me, you know, you have a good memory. Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of what we need to do oftentimes, really, because you're seeing one case to the next and how do you track it?
Right.
And that was gone for her, and, so yeah, I remember having this dialogue with her and just kind of, you know, just being there to validate, you know, like, man, you know, cause I knew, you know, the woman that she was, mm-hmm. and then just couldn't imagine, but she persevered too and got through, you know, her degree. So I think this is, as you were bringing awareness to us, mm-hmm. you know, this is a much more around us in a way that we probably aren't aware of. Oh, right.
100%. I wholeheartedly, so concussions work on a scale as well, right? You can have I think it's so interesting. Just a little history about post-concussion disorder. Men are more likely to die from traumatic brain injuries because of the trauma, because they're normally getting this injury in some sort of sport, right? Football, baseball, skydiving, I don't know, crazy things like that.
Right.
And girls are more likely to suffer the most in post-concussion syndrome and pass away from that because oftentimes, not all the time, of course, but oftentimes women aren't getting their injury in a directly like hard kind of hit. They will often survive, but then deal with this post-concussion syndrome after. And a lot of men do as well. Yeah. I would venture to say most people who have a serious concussion will deal with it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, like you said, don't even know it's a thing.
Yeah.
And beyond that, right. You do not have to have a serious concussion to develop post-concussion disorder that can be deadly. There are people, I have a good friend who, after my injury, fell off of his skateboard and he didn't even go to the hospital. He said, you know, he's like, oh, I woke up a little bit woozy, but I'm okay now. And I was like, no, you're not okay now. I don't think people take even minor concussions as serious as they should be because the brain is so sensitive. It's really just a puddle of jello floating around in some water. Like it's not well protected.
Right.
And, yeah, I think that's why I'm so passionate about speaking about it is because I see people with this injury all the time who don't understand the validity of what they're going through, right? They because so many other people play it off, I feel like a lot of times the people with the injury play it off. They say, oh, you know, it's just a concussion. Yep. Or it's like, no, a concussion can be really serious. And maybe this was just one concussion, but what happens the next time and the next time? Because concussions are accumulative and each one will get worse. And, you know, I think it's really scary. And when at the college I was going to, the university I was going to, almost exactly 1 year after the date of my accident, a football player on campus sustained a head injury. And I remember talking to my therapist because it was big news at school. You know, he got hit very hard. And it was big news. I remember telling my therapist, I don't trust that the people around him are going to take this seriously. He's a sports player. They're probably, you know, not giving him the time that he needs to be healing. And about 6 weeks later, I think it was, he shot himself in a dumpster in the back of his house. And I just remember that was kind of the moment for me where I was like, okay, that's it. I'm telling everybody I ever get a chance to talk to about this, I'm telling them. Because people don't take it seriously. The people who have it don't understand the validity of it. And the people around them don't understand how dark it can actually get for somebody with a brain injury. Because like I've said, when you have an injury, you don't understand that you have an injury. Sure. Your brain is trying to protect itself, trying to protect you. It's saying, hey, this is okay. This is normal. You're doing fine. But it's not. And it's really hard. It's an invisible injury. You know, there's no bruising. There's no, there's no broken bones. So it's really scary. And even people who just get a minor bump can still end up with some serious effects after the fact. Even my own dad, was in a hit and run not too long ago. And immediately when I picked him up, I realized he was repeating his sentences, asking the same questions. And he kept saying, you know, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And I was like, I don't care if you're fine. We're going to the hospital. Like we're putting you in the car. We're going to the hospital and we're going to let them tell you that you're fine because it's scary. And he was fine. But still for me, it's like, no, you're going to the hospital.
Yeah. I recently got recertified in CPR for work. And of course that's about obviously your heart and whatnot, but this dynamic that you described, our CPR instructor described as well, the difference between men and women.
Yeah.
And you almost verbatim, you know, said it about TBIs. What he was telling us about heart attack is, men will deny it, right? Suppress it. I'm fine. I got a little bit of chest pain, but I'm fine. And then they'll keep doing, they'll either keep playing the sport right there or keep working and then keel over.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I'm fine.
I'm fine.
Right. And what he was saying that women will do, they'll say, you know, I'm not feeling all that well, but when I get home, I'll take a look. You know what I mean? So that makes women sound planful. And when people have a plan, it puts the people around them at ease.
Yeah.
Right.
Very much so.
And so,
good point.
So then they'll go home and then the heart attack or like in this situation, we're talking about the TBI will really set in and everybody thinks, oh, you know, Jordan's got a plan. She'll be fine.
Yeah.
Well, your plan was in that moment not to be a burden and then worry about it when you get home.
Exactly.
And if you're by yourself, you know, that could be a recipe for, you know, how people die, after the fact around that. So
it's so scary. Like, and it's just, I always go back to saying like, it's so hard to explain what that feeling is like because I'm no longer in it. And when I was in it, I wasn't understanding what was happening.
Yeah.
But I just remember there being this overwhelming sense of like hopelessness, but hopelessness that's born from confusion because you don't know what anything is. You don't know what you're doing. You don't see a way out of it. You don't know how to get better. There's nobody around you that understands what's happening. And it's just like this whole sense of like, okay, well then what is going on then? What's going on? And like, yeah, it's so strange. And I wish kind of like this documentary, I almost wish that I had it recorded. So even I can look back now and say, oh yeah, I remember what I was feeling there because I don't really understand now what I was feeling then. But I just like all I see when I think about it is black. I just remember it being the absolute worst thing that ever happened. And even now in my house, I live with my parents, especially now during COVID. But we always refer to it as just the dark period, the Middle Ages, the dark times. We don't. There's nothing there. I don't remember what was going on, but I just know it was bad. We don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm also very involved with youth sports and being a coach. And of course, that's a huge thing now is coaches have to be, you know, concussion certified. And so I've done that several times. And then, you know, as I'm going through the trainings, here's what it looks like and here's how it can happen. And I start thinking, oh yeah, that happened to me.
That's happened. Yes. Yes. This is what I mean. Like there's so many people, like we just said not long ago, the brain, people think the brain is really well protected because it's in the skull. But if you hit your skull, your brain is no longer well protected. And it is so easily impactable. And even the smallest hit can have like, even if it's a year down the road, sometimes it takes time. Like with my injury, it took 20 minutes before my brain was like, oh, guess what? This is bad. Like I knew right away, but the adrenaline and the physical effects of what was actually the cognitive effects didn't actually physically affect me till about 20, 30 minutes later. We've even seen it. Who is that actor? Liam Neeson, whose wife hit her head while skiing and never went to the doctor. She didn't show any cognitive impairment whatsoever. And the next day she was dead from an aneurysm. Like these things, they just happen. Which is why I think this whole education process is so important, because most people, most people, when I tell them my story, will say something along the lines of like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that was possible. And I'm like, yeah, I know. And guaranteed it's happened to you or someone you love. The very first time I got a concussion, I was horseback riding and I was in a field, just like an open field with my horse. And I think we ran over something. I think it was a fox. I think a fox came out of a bush. We ran over a fox. My horse freaked the heck out, hit me in the head. I fell off. Luckily, I had a very nice horse and he went straight back to the barn and he alerted people that I was no longer on his back. And they thought, oh, well, that's not normal. They came to pick me up and they found me. I was sleeping in a field and, you know, woke me up. And my mom always says that I was just asking the same questions over and over again. Well, where was I? You were in the field. What was I doing in the field? You fell off the horse. Why was I on the horse? You were riding the horse. Where was I riding the horse? In the field. Why was I in the field? Well, you fell off the horse. Why was I on the horse? Over and over and over again. And I had a friend coming over that night and I was being really mean to my friend, just saying like, I don't want you to be here. I want you to go home. I don't know why you're here. I'm tired. And my mother grounded me. She thought I was being dramatic and she grounded me and she sent my friend home and she said, okay, no TV for a week. And then I woke up the next day and I what was I doing in the field? Why was I riding the horse? And my mom was like, okay, well, you know what? We're going to take you to the doctor because I don't know what this is. The doctor took one look in my eyes and was like, oh, she's hurt. And my mom to this day feels so bad about it, you know, but I always say, thank goodness we went through that, because if we didn't go through that, who knows what would have happened when I came home with this injury, you know? But I just think about how many other kids in the world have gone through something similar, or adults have gone through something similar, and nobody knows what to look for with these injuries, which is why I say even the smallest of bumps, take a seat, take a breather, go to the doctor if you can, and just make sure, because these things are really scary. And if you're the one with the injury, you won't know that you're injured. You won't, your brain will not let you know that you're, something's going on.
Well, if you're hard-headed like me, you might know that you're hurt and not say anything about it as well. And so,
you know, when you were telling your story about your ribs, it reminded me about in college, a friend of mine had been drinking some drinks and he fell off of a porch and onto a tree stump. And nobody thought anything of it. We were like, oh, funny. And he was like, haha, that was funny. And about a week later, he lifted up his shirt and he, like, three of his ribs were broken. And we were like, why didn't you tell us? And he was like, I don't know. And we were like, what?
I was too drunk.
He was like, well, what are the doctors going to do for it? They're just going to, like, they're going to give me some pain meds. And we were like, well, yeah, you still could have told us, bro. Like, you could have said, hey, by the way, I think I broke my ribs and I fell on this tree.
Yeah. So here's, I've got two kind of from childhood, or, you know, high school days. So I was a three sport athlete in high school and it was baseball season and I was walking around the outfield fence on the outside of it, you know, carrying my stuff. I was a catcher, so I always had a bunch of crap and, you know, kind of carry it out there. And so I'm on the other side of the outfield fence and I hear this faint, you know, I can still sense it.
Oh, no.
I heard somebody say, heads up.
Oh, no.
And I'm like this, and a baseball, somebody had thrown it from the home plate and it hit me right in the temple.
Oh, no.
And it, you know, and it knocked me down and I couldn't see straight for 3 days.
Yeah.
Like literally, like, but I never said anything about it because I was the main catcher, you know, for the high school varsity team. And we had, it was mid season. So we had games and whatnot. But now that I think back on it, I'm like,
yeah, you should have seen somebody, but you know, that's not entirely on you because you're a kid and you didn't know. And, you know, there's adults around you, which is why I think this is important. People need to be knowing. Yeah. They say baseball is actually can be one of the most deadly for traumatic brain injuries because baseballs are rock. It is a full on rock in your face if you get hit.
Right. Mm. Yeah. And then I had another one in football where, again, back, you know, this for me was the mid 90s, telling you how old I am. And I remember, and I played on the offensive line, and this block that I had to make, and the guy was absolutely huge compared to me because I'm not that big. And I remember coming up to the line. I knew the play call, and I'm looking at him over the corner of my eye, and I'm just like, oh my gosh,
it's a big guy, it's a big dude.
And I just went as fast as I could with reckless abandon and just, and I just remember seeing stars. No. I was laying up and looking up there, you know. No. But you know, back then it was like, you did a great job, get in there. I'm like,
yes,
where am I?
Yes. You know what I mean? Like, well, it wasn't until recently when I was speaking with a medical professional who was saying that it wasn't until the year, I think, 2011, when they even started officially diagnosing a traumatic brain injury, which is insane to me to think about how long we've been playing sports and doing things. And we're just now to the point where we can say, oh, that is an actual injury.
Right.
Tell me, what did you think it was? Like, what did you think was going on there?
And, you know, you know, there's lots of calls to end, you know, football and end youth football. And I know one of the things that tackle football, it exists and they're still testing it out, but they're going to have, you know, concussion monitors within the helmet.
Oh, that's amazing. And they would go,
so every player would have this helmet, and then you'd have to have somebody in. We actually did this in the youth leagues. You have a coach who's actually the safety coach, right? And so your whole job is to just monitor the players, you know. But then in this idea, the safety coach would have this tablet or iPad, and every play, if that sensor in the helmet registered like that's a hard hit, it would go bloop. It would tell you, and then you would pull that player out.
That's such a great idea.
You know what
I mean? That's such a great idea.
And if you had so many of those blips, then it's like you're sitting down for a week, or you need to go get checked out, or you know what I mean.
I think that's great. See, I couldn't imagine a life without. For me, I'm not so much personally connected to sports and football, but you take away sports and football, and my first thought is like, well, my concussions were from a music festival and from horseback riding, right?
And horseback riding,
things that, you know, I wouldn't want anyone to take away from me. Like, I would do it. I don't know. I almost said I'd do it all again, and then I was like, ooh, I don't know. Right. But like, here's the thing, it's going to happen anyway. The injury is going to happen. There's not anything you can do to stop people from hitting their head. If it's not a football, it's going to be at the concert. If it's not at the concert, it's going to be from falling off your roof. If it's not from falling off your roof, it's going to be from slipping on the ice. Something's going to happen. There's only so much you can do as far as preventative or safety measures. But what you're talking about sounds great. It sounds really cool. It's a great idea. But I think also that it's important to keep talking about it, you know? And I think it's great that this is such a big part of the discussion now, as we're finally coming around to like talking about what a brain injury is and how to identify it and things like that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll share one more story and then we'll wrap this up. Perfect. But you know, me working in corrections and I've seen a lot of blood and a lot of gore and you know, thing, I got 20 years in, so and so you just kind of training and this is how you do this, and so I'm no dummy when it comes to, you know, people getting hurt. And so one day, I think my oldest son was probably, I don't know, eight or nine, 10-ish, kind of in that time frame. And when we picked him up from daycare, the daycare provider, which is a small in-home daycare provider, so it was only, you know, 10 or so kids in there, so she knows them all well. Yeah. She knows, you know, their personality. She said, man, he's all he wanted to do was sleep when he got home from from school. Like, oh, okay, that's weird. You know, and he slept in the car, and when we got home, he wanted to go to his bed and sleep. And you know, so he woke up, you know, probably 8-9 o'clock at night, the way I remember it. I'm sure my wife will have a different, you know, recollection. It happens. And then, you know, we were trying to talk to him, like, hey buddy, you know, you've been sleeping, you know, a lot. Well, you know, how's it going? Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, I've got a big headache.
Oh.
And we said, well, you know, what's going on? He's like, oh, I crashed heads with this kid at school, and I got a headache. And then I'm looking at my wife, she's looking at me, and we're like, holy crap.
No.
So,
yeah.
So, again, I'm like, we need to take him to the ER right now.
Good move. It's so funny to me, because when I was growing up, and maybe it's because I had a concussion at kind of a young age, my first time, but I kind of grew up knowing that like the first sign of even a minor concussion is feeling tired. Yeah. But it's so funny because I just kind of thought everybody knew that. And it wasn't until that I started speaking about this injury and saying, you know, when I had mine, my doctors basically told me, not only can you not sleep for the next 8 hours, but try to stay awake for as long. If you can stay awake for 24 hours, do it. And people are like, oh my gosh, no way, really? Like, why is that? And I'm like, well, I mean, your brain can literally shut down on you, and that will be right. that. That's the right. end of it.
Right.
That
Absolutely.
Healing, that healing, that regeneration process at first only happens when you're awake. Now, once your brain is out of the danger zone, then it happens when you are asleep. Yeah. So it's kind of like a back and forth. Yeah. But yeah, that's always the first thing. Like, and it's mostly like you said, sports, football, skateboarding, baseball, where people are like, oh, I'm tired. And I'm like, okay, well, don't ever go to sleep ever again. That's like my first reaction is like, don't you do it. But yeah, any sort of vision change, speech change, or tiredness, the first things. So I'm like, you're going right to the hospital, my dude. Right to the hospital.
Yeah. So when we dialed it back and we're asking him more questions about it, he said, yeah, it happened in PE. And my wife worked for our school district for 20 years as well. And so she was very well connected. So you better believe the next morning she got on the horn. And yeah, the PE teacher said, yeah, I mean, they crashed pretty hard, you know, but she never reported it. Didn't send them to the school nurse. Didn't give us a heads up about it at all. And then when we took him to the ER, the doctor there kind of poo-pooed it. You know what I mean? Like, he looks fine to me, you know, and I'm just like, you know, because I'd known those stories, like you talked about how, you know, you can get bumped in the head, go to sleep and never wake up. Right.
Yeah.
And so I just felt like, you know, sharing that story because it's happening all around us, you know, and may not even be from, you know, a contact sport, like you were saying. It could be minding your own business at a music festival.
Yeah. I think it's important as much as noting that these injuries can happen anywhere is also noting that you and I have both had experiences with medical professionals whose first reaction was to not believe or not give a voice or validity to what was happening, which I think is super interesting. So if anybody's listening to this, I want you to know, if you think you're injured and you go to a doctor who tells you you're not, you can go to another doctor. Like, if you think you're injured, don't believe it. Because like, if I had gone to that first neurologist and he had ended up saying, no, I think you're okay, the last 7 years of my life would have looked drastically different. Yeah.
If anybody is listening, I've got, I'm coming up on 6,000 downloads, and each episode, you know, helps push that up there. So there's people listening for sure. Yeah.
Download this episode and send it to anybody who you know who plays a sport or has left their house ever.
Right.
They are at risk.
Or even hasn't left their house, right? These things happen.
Stairs. If you know somebody who is breathing, please send them this podcast and tell them to never sleep again.
Yeah.
Wise words.
Yeah, absolutely. Stay awake.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was great. I love talking about this. I just think I love sharing my experience. I think it's so important that people hear that it's a thing that exists.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you did a great job of, you know, sharing what it was like for you. Appreciate getting a glimpse into the therapy behind it, because I had no idea.
Thanks. I actually just came from therapy, so I was a little nervous because I'd already done a lot of talking, and I was gonna like, I hope my brain doesn't hit like a threshold where it's like, hey, no more words for you.
So you found out you were a therapy graduate just today?
No. So today was my talk therapy. Oh. I graduated from. So gotcha. I do physical, talk, and cognitive. I actually started, I don't often speak about this one in conjunction with the whole injury because it doesn't often make sense, but in that initial impact, I actually severed the tendons that held my neck to my shoulder. So I started physical therapy for that. And then once, you know, realizing how much my neck muscles can affect my brain, I started physical therapy. I left it for years and years and years and only recently went back, because I was ignoring all my other symptoms, and then things got too bad and I had to start all over again with physical therapy. But I graduated my cognitive therapy about a month ago, and then physical therapy at the moment. And then when I graduated my cognitive therapy, I put myself back in talk therapy because I just think it's important.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Awesome. Jordan, you are out there in the interwebs. You're on Instagram. Yes. You're in all kinds of places. Yes. Tell us what's going on. And if you have a big flower fight update, I want to hear that too.
Amazing. So we don't have a big flower fight update yet. We're still hoping that someday we're going to hear back. But the whole COVID thing has really put a damper on any sort of filming, especially that show was a lot of people intermixed, hands-on, physical labor in close proximity. I mean, we literally filmed it in a bubble, a literal bubble. Right. So no news on that on the moment. Yeah. My social media on all platforms is The Jordy Journey. You can find me most active on Instagram and TikTok of all places. I recently had a 15 million viewed video on TikTok that went super viral. So yeah, Instagram and TikTok are where you can find me most days.
Absolutely. And you and Sarah were episode 21 on the Upgraded Life podcast. So that's another way that you
amazing.
Can
amazing episode 21. We had so much fun doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah, absolutely. So super grateful for you to come on and share this story. And like Thanks. You said, you know,
thank you.
Year one or two probably wouldn't be in a place to do it, but now you're seven, and I appreciate your willingness yeah. to just give people a glimpse of what it's like and be kind to people.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
be
yeah.
kind to people.
100%.
There's coworkers. There's people in your communities. Heaven forbid, maybe one is one of your family members. You never know.
You never. Yeah. Invisible enemies are real. They exist. People are.
Could be that person that's checking you out at Trader Joe's at the checkout line too. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we get so fast paced and hurried and come on, what's wrong with you? Well,
sorry about it. Yeah. Me yeah, there might be with something, my you know. Tears running down my face, holding two boxes right. of cat cookies. I couldn't decide. Right. I ended up getting the vanilla ones, by the way. Oh no, I think I did get both. And then I gave her both. And I was like, I couldn't decide. And she was like, it's okay. Yeah. Luckily they were a gift for my roommate who at the time was helping with all this. So she was like, it's fine. We can eat all the cookies. It's fine. You don't have to choose. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still think in the future I'm going to make a motion for brain injury safe grocery stores that just have one brand of each item. Because even now, seven years in, if I go into a grocery store for ketchup, I will have a panic attack. There's 25 types of ketchup. Why do we need 25 types of ketchup? They all taste the same. Right. I don't know. I can't do it. My new thing for anybody out there that's listening, I learned only about halfway through. It was about 4 years in when I learned that if I write lists every day, it dramatically increases my anxiety and my panic. Mm. Like if I write down ketchup when I go into the grocery store, I walk in and I grab the first bottle of ketchup, I'm good. Make a list and just look at the list. If you feel like you need to panic, look at the list.
Amazing. Jordan, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you.
Thank you so All much. Right. I love this podcast. It's the best one.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
Just a great big thank you to Jordan. It takes a lot of bravery, takes a lot of courage to come on and talk about something like traumatic brain injury and just the way that she sustained it and all of the negative impact that it had on her life. And I just want folks to really understand what it takes, the toll that it takes, and all that's wrapped up into having to relearn how to do things that you absolutely take for granted, having to build new and a different appreciation for who you are and the people around you and the life that's ahead of you. That's all going to be different because you sustained a traumatic brain injury. Jordan did an excellent job of walking us through her journey. In fact, that is her social media handle across, I think, every platform is The Jordy Journey. So go follow her. Find her on TikTok. Find her on Instagram. And join The Jordy Journey. Also, check out her on The Big Flower Fight, her and Sarah Campbell. You can check that episode out earlier on in the Upgraded Life podcast. I think somewhere episode 30-ish, somewhere in there, if I can remember right. I'm not sure. But it's there. You can go check it out. And as always, to find out more and get the direct links to Jordan, where she's at social media wise, go over to my website. My website is www.nicksotelo.com/TUL podcast, the Upgraded Life podcast. And over at the website, you'll be able to find her links to social media. And you also will be able to find some opportunity buttons. And those opportunity buttons are my way of continuing work that I could be doing with you, other ways that you and I could connect. That's either through an opportunity to be coached by me. I can show people how to make extra money in their spare time. So if you want to make extra money in 15 minutes a day, that's something that I show people how to do. And if you are a person who knows about CBD, you've heard about CBD, it's all around us. When I drive down the streets in my city, you can't go more than a block without seeing at least two or three shops jammed into a city block. If you're curious about CBD, you don't know what it is, you don't know how it may benefit you, I can help you with that. I can give you some info. And if CBD is right for you, I'd love to be your source for all things CBD. So those are the three opportunity buttons at my website. It's just info. Click them, give me your email address, and I'll give you some info. That's all it is. Usually about 20 minutes of your time. All right. Thank you so much for listening to episode 50 of the Upgraded Life podcast. It is a week away from Christmas 2020, COVID Christmas. For those of you that are still listening, I appreciate you. And my heart goes out to everybody who has been impacted in some way personally in terms of people being sick by COVID-19. I know there is a vaccine on its way, and some people are really excited about that. And my heart goes out to also all of us essential workers, me being one of them. I've been going to work every single day, putting in extra long hours on a weekly basis, given the work that I'm required to do for the state of Oregon. My heart goes out to everyone. I pray that you have a blessed holiday season. This is the Upgraded Life podcast. I'm urging you to do something right now, as soon as this episode is off, to help yourself realize and reach your potential.